I texted Joey last week. I'm like, fucking Tammy got COVID. That's what I said. And Joey knew exactly who I was talking about.
I was like, oh, no.
He was like, no.
Hello, and welcome to episode 321 of Awards Daily's Water Cooler Podcast. I'm your host, Clarence Moy, and I'm joined by the other two M's. So, M's, let's go around the cooler and tell the listeners who you are and where they can find you on the internet. Megan, we'll start with you this week.
Hi, I'm Megan McLaughlin, and you can find me on Twitter at HeyDudeMeg.
Joey?
Hi, I'm Joey Moser. You can find me on Twitter at JoeyMoser83.
And again, I'm Clarence Moy. You can find me on Twitter at Clarence Moy, where I'm just about to break 200 followers. Woohoo!
Yeah!
Woo! Yeah!
sad, but funny. All right. So this week, we are going to talk about, finally, Disney Plus's WandaVision, which we have all now seen. Have we seen all episodes of it?
Yes.
Joey, did you finish it?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, excellent. So we're going to talk about the whole series. So if you haven't finished WandaVision, probably not the episode for you. But before we do that, we are going to hop into some recent award shows, spend very little time on that because I'm so sick of Zoom award shows. I can't even stand it. I thought they couldn't get worse until the Critics' Choice came along, and then canned laughter and applause just made me want to die. And then we'll talk about the TV DGA nominations and how that could potentially impact the Emmy race. You guys ready?
Yeah.
All right. Let's start with the Critics' Choice. Which,
I like how you just laugh every time you invest in Critics' Choice.
You know, one of our very favorite listeners, Rick, texted me the other night or wrote me on Facebook and said, hey, are you guys going to talk about the Critics' Choice? And I was like, no, I don't want to. I really don't. He's like, I love award shows. I'm like, I do too. And these are like the coffin that you put some of the award shows in. So Critics' Choice had a 3-hour ceremony that combined television and film, hosted by Taye Diggs, who, you know, I mean, come on, you got to give the guy. I mean, you can't feel sorry for the guy because it's Taye Diggs, right? So,
I have a confession. I've never watched a Critics' Choice.
Really?
Right. Yeah. Was it two nights ago that it was on? Wait, what was yesterday?
Sunday.
Yeah. I had on, I was watching Water for Elephants for the Uggie podcast coming soon.
Watched Meghan and Meghan Markle's thing?
I did not watch that. No, I didn't watch that. But I don't know. I've never watched it. My experience with the Critics' Choice is listening to you guys tell me what's going on. And I kind of enjoy it that way.
Well, it did air on the CW, and has always aired on the CW, so that kind of tells you about the production values.
Paul Cole soundtrack? Or?
I don't want to wait. this time, it was an amalgamation of... It took me a long time to figure out, and Joey, I don't know if you had the same issue. It took me a long time to figure out, was this actually live? Because so much of it felt pre-recorded, and then there were these canned laugh tracks that were put in whenever someone who was receiving an award would you know, make a joke, they would immediately hit that laugh button. I'm like, is this pre-recorded? But then they, Carrie Mulligan, when she won, she made some reference to it being International Women's Day. And so I was like, oh, this is live. I was completely confused. Maybe it was just me.
Yeah, it was weird.
It was weird. And some of the, obviously some of the people nominated did not attend. And it just felt, it felt like your office had an award show.
Oh God.
Yeah.
It was not good. But, on the TV side, The Crown actually, and the other thing that came up with the Critics' Choice is they kind of rubber stamped the Golden Globes.
Yeah. Well, the voting for Critics' Choice was sort of the same, very short voting period like the Oscars have, like, if you missed it, Oscar voting happened pretty much by the time this goes up, it'll pretty much be over. But like Critics' Choice only had like 5 days of voting too,
right?
And I was looking at like Critics' Choice, you know, their, what would you call it, their record of being accurate for Oscars and stuff. I mean I guess we're just talking about TV, but their record though isn't like great. Like, it's kind of
doesn't help. They have like 85 ties.
Yeah. Because I saw a lot of people like, well, Carey Mulligan's back in the race. And I'm like, is she? Like, because I thought she would get this one. Like, this wasn't really one that I thought she wasn't going to get.
Right. I mean, the thing that they try to do is they try to predict or influence the Oscars.
Yeah, but I don't think they ever really have.
Well, what were you going to say, Joey?
I said I hate that so much.
Yeah. Well, the thing that happens is by the time, you know, with the calendar shifting, by the time they have their awards, the narrative changes. Like they're basing it off of the early sort of traditional December window. And then by the time you get to the guilds, it's very often a completely different race.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
But I mean, it seems like this year, I get the sense that people are just, I don't want to say giving up, but they're just like, okay, the consensus is Nomadland. The consensus is Chloe Zhao. So that's what it's going to be. And it's not to say that that is not a worthy movie, but everybody is lining up to say that is the best film of the year, as if that was the only thing that kind of.
I just don't think that you can count anything out. Like, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I think Chloe Zhao is completely deserving, but I wouldn't be surprised if she doesn't win. Like, I just think that, I don't think that anything is safe. And I think that's kind of fun too that way. Although I do think I finally watched the Billie Holiday movie, and I agree with what everybody has said about it, that it's like, you know, not like a perfect film or anything by any means, but I do think Andra Day is really good. Like, and it's such an Oscar-y performance. Like,
yeah.
It's of all of
not
the ones
according
in that
to
category,
Twitter.
I know, but like of all the ones in that, I'm like, this is so Oscar-y. Like, it feels the most one. Like, it reminded me of Marion Cotillard winning. It's just because that was a messy movie too. I remember Olivia and Rose not being like a great movie, but a great performance. I don't know. I thought I was really impressed. And I think we're not making a big enough deal that this is her first like big film. It's kind of amazing how like she's so confident. I was just struck by that.
Well, there's definitely a confidence in her performance where she connects with Lady Day. Much more than, you know, I've never seen the Lady Sings the Blues, but from what I've heard, this is a true sort of interpretation of who Billie Holiday was. Although I'm still confused, and maybe one of you can clarify this for me. I'm still confused as to, you know, all the scenes where she's performing on stage and then the cops come and rip her off the stage because she's singing Strange Fruit. That didn't really happen, right?
I thought it did.
I didn't. For some reason, I thought it didn't. But it, I mean, maybe I'm wrong because that seems like such a strange omission or twisting of the facts that I thought I'd read on the Wikipedia page that she'd never actually got arrested for that. Or, I don't know. She did get into legal trouble, but.
Yeah.
When I just Googled, this is obviously very unscientific research that I just did. I Googled Billie Holiday taken off stage. And the first thing that popped up says, when touring the South, Holiday was sometimes be heckled by members of the audience in Kentucky and Louisville. A man called her the N-word wench and requested she sing another song. Holiday lost her temper and had to be escorted off the stage.
All right. Escorted off the stage is one thing, but like kicked up the way that she is in, you know, in the film is not escorted. She was literally picked up from where she stood and carried off the stage like a
set.
I mean, it's very weird.
Yeah, I don't know for sure. I just assumed since it was trying to be historically accurate that probably did happen, but I'm not sure.
Anyway,
it doesn't. Anyway, yeah, she's really good. Yeah, I just was so impressed with her. And I don't think people were making a big enough deal that this is like her first like starring role, really.
Right. Mm-hmm. The other thing that's strange while we're talking about the film, Critics' Choice Awards, I mean, everything else pretty much seemed in alignment with what has won before. I keep seeing this thing, and maybe this is a film Twitter topic, but I keep seeing this narrative that Minari is somehow a second runner-up to Best Picture.
I see that.
I don't see a narrative there. I mean, it's a great film. It's a really great film. But I just don't see the narrative for it. I mean, it hasn't won anything outside of foreign film.
I see more of a narrative for like Sound of Metal, and even, I mean, that's a stretch, but I think Sound of Metal is the one that's been buzzing more than Minari.
I don't know. I feel like maybe some people might see a similar narrative between how Parasite got sort of shoved over to that category, but Parasite was getting nominated for Best Picture in other places too. I mean, Minari's also nominated for SAG at SAG Ensemble. I would love it if he won there. But I mean, I was talking to Kevin about it, and he told me that he had, I'm forgetting the actress's name, the actress who plays the mother.
Han Yiri?
I think so. Yeah, I think he said that he thinks that she's like a threat for like a surprise Best Actress nomination, or I've seen other people saying other people from the movie could be nominated. I was like, I don't see it. If you're thinking, maybe, and Kevin's probably going to yell at me, but, and I think we've had a brief conversation about it, but I don't see it.
Although there was that surprise nomination with
Marina de Tavera.
Yeah, from a couple years ago, which kind of came out of nowhere.
True, very true. But again, that film had a lot more traction with... you get the sense that it had more broad support, which could cause a surprise nomination like that. I'm not saying that Minari doesn't. I'm just saying there, you know, if you're trying to compare it against Parasite, which I know, Joey, a lot of people are, so I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying a lot of people are comparing it against Parasite. Parasite had this constant excitement around it. People love Minari, but I don't think that people are excited by it.
Right. I would agree with that.
It's a deeply touching, emotional film. Please don't get me wrong by thinking that I don't like it. I do. I think it's fantastic. It's one of my favorite films of the year. I just don't get that same Parasite sense where people are feeling like they're seeing something completely new, or something, you know, that you can break through this new barrier by giving a foreign film Best Picture. That excitement and that heat behind it just isn't there. And I don't know that it could be.
Yeah, it was kind of the excitement around like, that I felt, I don't know if this is weird, but like The Sixth Sense, like you have to go see this. Like, don't spoil it. You know, it's that kind of thing. Whereas Minari's not that kind of movie, and that's not the kind of movie you want it to be.
No. So let's talk about the TV categories. This is where Critics' Choice kind of rubber stamped the Globes in most categories. They didn't match One for One, of course, because Ted Lasso won Comedy Series over Schitt's Creek. But The Crown repeated all of its wins. Michael K. Williams won for Lovecraft Country, which I was very happy to see because he's great in the show. Catherine O'Hara, Daniel Levy won. Hannah Waddingham won for Ted Lasso, so they had a great night. And he won Comedy Actor, right? Yes, he did. So,
and he had a great speech, too. I thought
he definitely improved.
Yeah. You could tell they were like, hey, put on a hoodie, but say something different.
But I was surprised that Donald Sutherland won for The Undoing.
That is shocking. But then again, it's Donald Sutherland. You know, he's very good in it.
It's Donald Sutherland and it's HBO. Didn't get a lot of, this is not HBO's year, I would say, so far. They do have a Kate Winslet limited series called Mayor of East Town, which I just got a screener for. Coming up. So
that looks good. I saw some trailers for it.
It's filmed in Pittsburgh, right?
No, I think it's in Philadelphia area.
Okay. And I'm still, I will forever, I don't know if you guys feel the same way, I will be forever bewildered by Uzo Aduba being the performance out of Miss America to win all of these awards.
Yeah, I actually am shocked too, and not because she's not good in it, but I don't know. I really thought Tracy Ullman was the supporting one that would, like, she's the one who pops the most, I think. But maybe because she's more of an unlikable character, I guess, in a way. And maybe because Uzo Aduba's character, was it Jalal that said that maybe they will reward like the real life character as opposed to the actress a little. I mean, I think they are rewarding totally Uzo Aduba, but also kind of paired with her playing this Shirley Chisholm, you know, who's
yeah.
a big deal. Like, not that the other ones aren't a big deal, but she's a little more, I would say, overly beloved.
Mm-hmm. Who is playing her in that biopic they just announced? Is it? It's not Regina King, is it?
Yeah, it's Regina King.
Okay, so yeah, watch out for her Best Actress Oscar there. What else about the TV categories?
Well, John Boyega beat Mark Ruffalo, so he took that
in lead. Yeah.
Which
I was happy about that. And actually, I'm a little surprised that I know Queen's Gambit is very critically acclaimed. Obviously, we all love it. I'm a smidge surprised that Small Axe didn't take limited series because it is the critics, and critics from both film and television were like, you know, losing it over that series. Mm-hmm. Rightfully so, because it's incredibly well done. I thought that actually might, you know, pick up there. But Queen's Gambit's great.
Queen's Gambit is great. I would... I mean, right now, it definitely is the front runner for limited series, for sure. But let's see how Small Axe is campaigned, and let's see what happens with Aretha. Because you know, Netflix doesn't have the best track record of making it all the way to the end with their fall limited series, right? So we'll see.
I'm surprised that Hamilton won, to be honest. Bad Education was such a great film, and I'm surprised that it's really gotten the shaft. Like, and Hugh Jackman, I mean, it's one of Hugh Jackman's best work, and I just feel like that movie has just kind of been forgotten. And I don't know, everybody who I've talked to about Hamilton is that it was just a filmed musical, and that just surprises me that that's what won in that category.
Do you think, and looking back, this is more of a sort of a post-mortem on that performance for Hugh Jackman, as great as it is, do you think that there was some, I won't say controversy, but there was an lingering issues over a straight man playing a gay man?
I feel like he didn't get that, though.
No, I don't think so. And also because, I don't know, maybe because of the rumors that have always circulated around
him.
Right.
I feel like I think some people don't care if straight people play gay, if it's somebody that they like and or are attracted to. Like, no one's talking. No one bitched about Timothée Chalamet. No one really bitched about Stanley Tucci.
Wait, who did Timothée Chalamet?
Call Me by Your Name.
Right. I don't know. I was thinking of Timothy Oliphant for some reason.
He was gay in 2000s at the Brooklyn Hearts Club.
Oh, you're right. You're right. You're absolutely right. Nobody made a big deal about that at all with Armie Hammer, with Timothée Chalamet. Everybody was like, and also they didn't make a big deal of the fact that, like, isn't Timothée Chalamet like 16 or 17 in that movie?
They did make an issue with that.
They made a big deal about that. They made a bigger deal about that than the fact that he was playing. If it's somebody who is, that people are excited about, they sort of don't care.
Well, I think that
having
read the book, I think people kind of gave them a pass on that one because Timothée Chalamet's character is exploring his sexuality.
Yeah, he's kind
of. And like, don't get me wrong, I think it's like because Dirty Dancing always bothered me. That's like that, you know, Baby is like 16 or 17, and like Patrick Swayze looks like he's 36, and you know, so I always found that like. So it was something, you know, always acknowledged, but, you know, you kind of, when it comes to exploring your sexuality, it's okay, but it is something to think about.
Anyway, anything else with Critic Choice?
No.
Yeah.
All right. So let's quickly talk about TVDGAs. Now, I want to give a plug out to anyone who hasn't visited awardsdaily.com/ADTV that we do have our 2021 Emmy tracker up and running. That is the consolidated predictions from all of ADTV's team members. Sorry, try to say that five times fast. Usually we try to have 10 nominees in every category. Not every category has 10 worthy nominees because of COVID-19. and we only rank things that we have seen. So check that out just to see where we think the race stands. But with the TGA nominees, we have in the dramatic series, Jason Bateman for Ozark, Jon Favreau for The Mandalorian, Vince Gilligan for Better Call Saul, Leslie Linka-Glater for Homeland, and Julie Ann Robinson, Bridgerton. Kind of not helpful for predicting the Emmys because three of those nominees aren't eligible for 2021.
Oh, yeah. You're right.
And I think, you know, I love this woman. She's fantastic. I had a great conversation with her, but I think Leslie Linka-Glater could film herself taking a dump on the toilet and she would get a TGA nomination.
You're probably right. I was looking, when I saw that, I was like, Homeland showed up?
Like, when we were watching Critics' Choice last night, when they announced Claire Danes being nominated for Homeland, Jason was a little, he was like, that is still on?
It doesn't end.
Doesn't end. What is Homeland?
But no nominations for Lovecraft Country, which had showed up in a lot of places.
That's not good for that, is it?
Well, no. It is an omission for sure. But it's tough to say because there's three shows here that are not eligible in the next year. So it's confusing.
Yeah, that's true.
But the fact that it didn't show up there over The Mandalorian.
Yeah.
Is surprising. Like, don't write off The Mandalorian. The Crown is not here, but The Crown, I don't think, Jalal and I were talking about this today, I don't think the directors of The Crown are TGA eligible because they have never been nominated. But Bridgerton got in.
I did see that WandaVision kind of got its first little nomination here too.
It did in the limited series category, which was accompanied by Suzanne Beer for The Undoing, Scott Frank for The Queen's Gambit, Thomas Kail for Hamilton, Matt Shankman for WandaVision, and Lynn Shelton for Little Fires Everywhere.
I like how it's people... Wait, no, never mind. Lynn Shelton didn't direct the whole thing.
But Suzanne Beer did.
And
Scott
Matt
Frank
Shankman
did, I think.
Matt Shankman did.
Yeah, so that's kind of like anybody... Well, I think probably... I think there's something special about The Queen. I mean, not that they're not, other shows aren't special, but The Queen's Gambit really just, I don't know. It really took people by surprise, I think. And I think it's something that it's good on a rewatch too, that people will be, want to rewatch it.
That will win for sure.
Yeah. I think that's going to win.
I will say if you want a sort of funny rewatch in it of it, Trixie and Katya do a series on YouTube called Queens Like to Watch, and you watch them sort of watch through the whole series in like a 15 or 20 minute episode. It's actually really funny.
In comedy series, you have two nominations for Ted Lasso, one from Zach Braff, one from MJ Delaney. You have two nominations for Curb Your Enthusiasm, Aaron O'Malley and Jeff Schaefer, and one for Susanna Fogel for The Flight Attendant.
It's nice to see more women in these categories.
For sure. Is MJ Delaney a...
Yes.
I would assume that is a woman.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. So that's excellent. Three women.
I think TVDGA for comedy series usually... I might be misremembering this, but women usually do pretty well. In sorry, I'm on the Wikipedia page now. No, Bill Hader won the last 2 years, and Beth McCarthy Miller for Veep, Becky Martin for Veep. So it's not okay. Never mind. My statement doesn't really hold water.
Well, last year you did have Watchmen winning for that was the first sort of bellwether that people were going to take Watchmen seriously. Was it when it won the DGA? For the woman who directed the pilot, whose name completely escapes me.
Nicole Cassel.
Thank you. Cassel.
Cassel, excuse me.
I don't know. I thought it was Cassel, but I'm probably wrong.
I think you are right.
I mean, Flight Attendant and Ted Lasso. Those are the Emmy frontrunners for comedy series.
Yeah.
And, oh my God, can I just stop and say for a second? I did look online at our post on Awards Daily during the Critics' Choice, and friend of Awards Daily was out there complaining about every time somebody talked about Schitt's Creek. Which is interesting. Schitt's Creek would have been actually, would they have been eligible for Directors Guild of America if it was made in Canada?
I don't know.
It doesn't matter. I mean, it's not eligible for any more Emmys, but I don't know. All right. So that's the DGA. Anything else about that one?
No.
All right. Should we jump over to WandaVision?
Sure.
Which every time someone says it, I think, are you saying Long Division?
Right. Doesn't it sound like Long Division?
It does.
It's my fault. I put that in your brain.
You did. You absolutely did. I've done a lot of talking, but do you want me to just jump into it, or does someone else want to go into what WandaVision is?
Do it.
Okay.
Do it.
So WandaVision is a limited series airing on Disney Plus of 9 episodes that follows the adventures of Wanda Maximoff, who is previously known in the comic books as the Scarlet Witch, but has never been referenced as the Scarlet Witch up until this series. And she, the first couple of episodes start off with a pastiche of sitcoms from the 50s, 60s, and 70s, straight up through 2000s. And then right around episode 4, you start to find out what's going on. Why are they in these sitcom worlds? And it becomes more of a Marvel-y thing. That's a verb now, or an adjective. A pastiche of kind of Marvel lore, so to speak. But really what the series, I think, where it succeeds most strongly is in its exploration of grief. That is the sole reason for this creation of this world and this exploring of your past and acceptance of sorrow and tragedy and moving on and accept, you know, all of that stuff. That's sort of at the heart of WandaVision. I'm going to try to say that more explicitly now. WandaVision.
Sorry.
No. That's quite all right. So Elizabeth Olsen is great in it. Paul Bettany is very good. Catherine Hahn is very good. But it's an odd little thing. I'll just start with my sort of overall take of the whole series, and then I'll let you guys talk. It's it is the most un-Marvel Marvel series product that I've ever seen in all of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And I think it's good for that. I am one of those strange people that probably preferred the sitcom atmosphere of it. When I felt like it kind of cut over into the Marvelish aspects, it kind of became it still engaged me. And I do want to talk about the fact that it aired, it didn't air en masse. It aired once a week and kind of became a cliffhangery show. But remind me to mention that before we cut. But I thought the exploration of the sitcoms was far more interesting than what became of the sort of Marvel Cinematic Universe aspects of it.
I 100% agree, because, you know, it takes to this point where, you know, what's it going to be this week? You know, and I think that was a smart way of bringing in a broader audience. But I kept wondering, as I was watching the last 2 episodes, I felt like it was the gimmick had kind of run out, and them trying to explain why she was obsessed with TV didn't quite work for me. I get, you know, in the first sequence where she's, you know, her parents die as she's watching television. But then when she's like chilling in her dorm room at Iron Man headquarters and watching Malcolm in the Middle, I was like, what? This bitch is watching Malcolm in the Middle with Vision? Like, I was just, that threw me off a little bit. I thought, I don't even know where you could watch Malcolm in the Middle in syndication. Maybe it's just me, but it was just an odd, the way they kept kind of forced, like, here's where she saw this. Like, it just felt very forced. And I found myself quickly losing interest in the show because it did become very Marvel-y. And also, I'm probably the only person who's going to say this. I think Catherine Hahn is amazing in it, but I think her character is not that interesting to me. I thought I was waiting for this great, like, oh, she's so, like, this is such an interesting thing. And really, she's just evil, and that's about it. And is she good in it? Yeah, but I hope that people aren't like, give her the Emmy for this, because she's done so many much.
Twitter.
Oh my God. She's been doing, this is not her best. And let me say, everything she does is amazing. She's great in everything, but this role is not great.
Well, I feel like she's better until she gets to, and again, I'm a fan of the show, right? But I feel like she is better in the initial episodes up until about the eighth or ninth episode when she has to go big. And I'm not sure, I'm going to say this is going to be controversial. I'm not sure that it's within her wheelhouse to go cartoony, like a cartoon villain, like the way that she was playing. I felt uncomfortable with how she was delivering some of those lines and sort of the
big, I did too.
It just didn't work. Her performance in those last couple episodes did not 100% work for me. And it pains me to say that because I'm a huge fan of hers, but I don't think it's necessarily her as much as it is the big paintbrush that they were using to create that character.
I agree. And they did the same thing. I'll let you talk in a second, Joey. I'm sorry. They did the same thing with Elizabeth Olsen's character where she was saying things that were so cheesy that I was like rolling my eyes. And like at the point where like the whole family's together and they're fighting, I was like, Jesus Christ, like, get me out of this world. Like throw me through the bubble. Like it's just, it came like The Incredibles. And I was just like, okay, this was doing something deep. And then now it's, I don't think the last two episodes worked. And I know people are going to be like, you just don't understand Marvel. But I don't know, if you're trying to do a Marvel show that you want to win a bunch of Emmys, you're going to have to reach a broader audience. And I didn't think it didn't do it for me.
Well, I'll let Joey talk, but I just to follow up on that point right there, I don't think they care at all about winning Emmys for this show. I think all they wanted to do was to bring that Marvel audience to Disney Plus to get subscribers.
I think they wanted this Emmy push because of like, it's about tragedy and trauma. I mean, they even say in it, like Catherine Hahn's like, your trauma. And I'm just like, oh, she has this girl has a lot of trauma, but it's also, I don't think they really, I think they could have explored more of it. And I don't think they do enough with it.
I was disappointed that it sort of flies into typical Marvel territory in the last two episodes. I kind of disagree that I do think Catherine Hahn is good in what she's doing, but I don't think the tone of that matches what the rest of the show is doing. Mm-hmm. So I kind of liked her being completely crazy over the top, although I will say the whole time I kept thinking of her as the villain from the Spider-Verse movie the whole time that I was watching it. And her was flying around. But I was just sitting there. I was like, I want her to be in like a villain in like a Gem in the Holograms movie or like a Power Rangers movie. Like the big ass hair, the giant billowy costume. I actually thought the whole time in the last two episodes, I was like, huh. Has there ever been a really gritty movie about the Salem witch trials? This isn't it. But someone want to greenlight that show?
You mean other than The Crucible?
Well, I mean, there's The Crucible, but I knew you say that. Like, actually, other than The Crucible, yes. I mean, there's only been like one huge major.
Right.
Someone's got to
correct. Season of American Horror Story, where they did talk about the Salem witch trials.
Yeah, that was real gritty.
yeah, real gritty. Really real.
I mean, I gritted my teeth.
I actually was surprised by when, because I watched it mostly all in one sitting. Not one sitting, but in a binge-style format, because it had gotten away from me. I liked the exploration of grief. I thought it was actually very interesting. I thought actually, the whole time, I was like, oh, this is actually something that Marvel could do, like, in a long-form format where they could explore the characters. I thought that was... I was very, very intrigued by that. I agree that I loved the, you know, mysterious tone surrounding all the TV stuff. I loved all that. But I feel like by the end of it, though, I got kind of disappointed in that last episode. I was like, oh, it's just another Marvel thing.
Right. That's what I felt like, too.
And I do feel like I saw something, and I feel like this could stand on its own. Like, this could stand on its own as, like, its own season or series or whatever. But I got kind of annoyed. It's the thing that I have my biggest problem with the whole franchise or whatever universe, excuse me, I'm so sorry, the whole cinematic universe of Marvel anyway, it's just like, I saw a headline that was like, the four movies that are going to be offshoots of WandaVision. And I was like, okay, like, I'm so tired. even in a pandemic, I'm just like, okay, whatever. But, no, I liked a lot of it. I think Paul Bettany, who knew, he had really good comedic timing.
The performances are all amazing. Like, really, they are really good. Elizabeth Olsen's really good.
She's really good.
Wanda, I mean, even, like, I do think that you're right, Clarence, that it's like, I think Catherine Hahn's, I think the thing that bothers me most is just that people were like, give her an Emmy now. Who knew Catherine Hahn could do that? It's like, she's done so many fucking amazing
things.
I'm
going to kill somebody.
Yeah, like, and go, like, crack open Mrs. Fletcher, bitches. Like, where have you been?
Well,
like,
and her performance in Transparent should have gotten, you know, an Emmy.
Right.
I mean, she's been great.
Transparent.
Yeah, she really was. Yeah, I'm sorry, Megan, you continue.
No, I was just like, yeah, I'm totally with you. Like, there's so many things she's done. It's like, this is what you're going to pick out of that lineup? Like, she's done some of the, like, best work for a woman over 40, I'd say, mm-hmm. like, on television. And then maybe even in movies, too, sometimes. Like, she's just great. Like, and I just am upset that this is what we're kind of, oh, let's give her an Emmy for this. I mean, she's great, but this is... This is a comic book TV show, and I know here come the hate mail. But like,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, that's it.
Oh, okay. The other thing I was gonna say, I was like, you know, I kind of want to go watch that Facebook Watch show, Sorry for Your Loss, which stars Elizabeth Olsen as a woman whose husband suddenly dies. Because I've seen like two or three episodes of it, and it's engaging.
But
it has
she's
a good
not
death.
A superhero, Joey. Nobody cares about her grief.
<That's>,
she doesn't have a bubble over Westview.
The whole time I was like, this is some like weird ass under the dome, desperate housewives.
Yes. Yeah.
Which I kind of enjoyed, but I don't know. And I gotta say, this is gonna be this statement does not reflect the views of Megan McLaughlin or Clarence Moy. But if you fucking homosexuals, see, I used the hateful Alabama preacher pronunciation of that, homosexuals. If you homosexuals ruin one more fucking thing and say that this deserves an Emmy, that deserves an Emmy, first of all, you don't know the majority of how the Emmy shit works. Like, I see one more homo be like, oh my god, Agatha all along, Emmy, give that song an Emmy. I was like, it's 12 seconds long!
Yeah, it literally hit nothing. Yeah.
And I'm mad at, I mean, I know it's Twitter, stay off Twitter. It's the most popular show on TV right now, blah, 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 blah. You shouldn't, you know, should not expect not to get spoiled. But that, like, Agatha all along sequence I was telling Clarence earlier, that fell flat for me.
Yeah, because of everybody talking about it. Yeah, me too.
And that's maybe my own fault more than anybody else's fault, but those homosexuals, I hate you.
I also predict nobody will be talking about this show in 3 months.
Oh, no, because the I don't know. I there's going to be so many think pieces like, this is why you should consider WandaVision.
It's already burned out. Like, I feel like there was such a buzz 2 weeks ago with the Agatha stuff. And then after that, like, I feel like it's already, like, we've moved on. We're now into the Meghan and Harry saga. Like, it's just, I just feel like it's already, it's already had its moment and it's gone.
I don't know that I agree with that, but we'll see. Because I don't know how much else there will be in the limited series race to, you know, take its place. But that said, one thing that I found really interesting is you both binged it. I suspect
I didn't binge it.
Oh, you didn't? Did you watch it week to week?
I caught up with it. I watched maybe two episodes at a time, and then I caught up with it week to week. For the last two or three weeks.
Okay. Well, I was wondering if this kind of show, it was interesting that they don't drop all of their shows at once, right? They don't do the Netflix thing where it's like, there it is. And I think this probably worked better, at least for us here in this house. This worked better as a week to week thing because they did leave everything on a cliffhanger.
I agree with that. I do think the cliffhangers really worked. And because you're like, well, what's going to happen now? Also, the surprise, I wanted to mention this, but now that I think of it, like Evan Peters showing up was kind of a surprise to me. Was he playing his X-Men character?
No, people are very, I don't think so. The finale revealed him to be an actor who had been empowered by Agatha Harkness to become Quicksilver. And I suspect it had something to do with that necklace that Monica Rambeau ripped off of his neck.
Okay. I'm having deja vu where I feel like I've seen this character before.
I did find that kind of annoying because I felt like they were trolling the Marvel.
And then he's gone too.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Well, because he played, oh my God, I'm just brain farting. What's his name? The other one? That's Aaron Taylor Johnson. That's it.
Yeah. Aaron Taylor Johnson played him in Avengers. And then
Age of Ultron. But he dies.
Right. Correct. He only was in one movie.
Pietro.
Yes.
Pietro.
And then Evan Peters played Quicksilver in the 3 X-Men movies.
Remember when Aaron Taylor Johnson almost got nominated for an Oscar sitting naked on a toilet taking a shit? End of conversation. Continue.
I actually thought Evan Peters was really good in this, and I even tweeted that he reminds me so much of Michael Keaton.
Yeah, I love that.
So much of Michael Keaton. I was like, who does
he? I thought that was a criticism.
No, I mean, I thought that he did. I love Michael Keaton. Who doesn't love Keaton? No, I thought that he was like, they should do a father son type of thing because he was just very Beetlejuicy.
He does have that zany sense of comic timing and kind of the off kilter, and he really needs to stop doing horror story.
Yeah. I liked him in this role. And then I was kind of sad when he was gone. Well, I guess he kind of comes back, but that episode where he shows up was kind of fun.
Yeah, that was my favorite episode, I think, because they did the Halloween.
Yeah, that was a fun episode.
It was. All right, well, we'll see if this survives the next couple of months. I imagine that this is Disney's only limited series that they would be campaigning this year, because I think I don't know if Falcon and Winter Soldier is a drama series or not, but that starts in 2 weeks. Or a week now. But we'll see whether it hangs around. It did get a DGA nomination, so.
Yeah, that's definitely good.
Although there isn't much competition, so. All right. Let's move off to the flash forward to the media. We're most anticipating the upcoming week. And Joey, why don't you go first?
I am not ready. I will defer to Megan McLaughlin.
Okay.
Joey, you know we do this, Joey. You know we do this.
I know.
So I've got the finale of 1,000 Pound Sisters. I've got The Challenge, which has been really good. I've got, I'm reading Lindy West's book, Shit, Actually, which I recommend for both of you. Did you? Oh my gosh, it's so funny. I was laughing out loud today while listening to it on the bus. And I felt bad because I was looking at a guy struggling to put his bike on the bus rack, in the bus rack. And I thought, he probably thinks I'm laughing at him. No, I'm just laughing at Lindy West. And then there is Floribama Shore has been amazing. I've heard that Cecil Hotel is really good on Netflix, so I would to try to watch that. I need to watch The Crown because I've caught up with, caught up with everything that I needed to catch up with. That's about it.
Joe, are you ready?
Now that I'm thinking about it, I was like, there's not a lot of stuff the week that I'm looking forward to. I don't think so. I think the thing that I'm probably most looking forward to is, and I've been saying it, every week for a while, is Drag Race UK better than Drag Race US, just because I want to know who's going to, I think they're going to go to, they're in the top 4 now, I think.
Yeah.
No. So I want to know who's going to be in the top 3.
Lawrence Chaney.
Every time, he pops up on screen, I just yell out in a Scottish accent, sexual tension.
I love him.
Which, by the way, I think Megan and I should do a podcast series where Every week we make a heterosexual man who has never watched Drag Race watch Drag Race, and then we talk.
Maybe I'll find a man that way.
Okay.
We have to know straight guys first.
That is very true. Now, I will say that I remember when Clarence saw a random episode of Drag Race, he was very drawn to Alyssa Edwards.
Who isn't drawn to Alyssa Edwards?
I want to actually send... I'm going to send you a link, Clarence, to a like a 2-minute performance, and I want you to tell me which one you actually like. So, I guess...
He's not going
to
watch those.
No, come on, man. It's the... come on.
It's Clarence. Oh, I'm also looking forward to the South Park vaccination special Wednesday. Yeah, I'm really excited about that, too.
Also, I'm just excited for Call Me Cat, too. I'm obsessed with that show.
Oh, it's such a cute... I need to catch up.
It's the show that has a curtain call, so yes. Love it. That's it.
All right. Well, I'm going to continue my binging of Ted Lasso. I'm kind of parsing that out, enjoying it very much. And I'm continuing my rewatch of Schitt's Creek with my wife. And I am going to finally sit down and watch Aretha, which we just got finally, like we've been holding on screeners for months and months. We just got screeners last week. Watch Aretha. And I need to watch Mare of Easttown, which I'd mentioned I just got screeners for.
You slut.
He mentioned that. Where were you?
I don't know how I did
not. Not paying attention.
Yeah.
Not paying attention.
All right. So does that cover it?
Yeah.
Okay, let's get the hell out of here. So we are the 3Ms, contributors Joey Moser, Megan McLaughlin, and me, Clarence Moy, thanking you for joining us, asking you to remember to rate us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find us, and wishing you a very pleasant tomorrow.